pleased to welcome today Deb Alderson of SAIC to talk about trends that she's seeing in the marketplace and other issues that SAIC is dealing with. Deb, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming
in
today.
Nice to see you, too. Thank you so much.
For the five people that have been living under a rock and don't know what SAIC does for government customers, give me the elevator speech.
Well, SAIC is 41 years young, around $11 billion in revenue. Our largest customer is the federal government, about 95% of our revenues. We do everything from providing surveillance systems, command and control. We also support the military in providing solutions for our warfighters, a wide range of things. You can just imagine after being around as long as we have been and with the success that the company's had that our focus is on serving the mission and on providing innovative solutions. Hence our tagline, from science to solutions.
Mm-hmm. You're president of SAIC's Defense Solutions Group. What are you seeing as Secretary Gates talks seemingly every 5 minutes about finding efficiencies and tail to tooth and so on and so forth? How have those initiatives, or at least the threat of those initiatives, changed the way that the agency is talking to your company and other companies like you, or changed the way that you are thinking about and planning about dealing with the Pentagon over the next couple of years?
Say there's a real increased emphasis on cost, cost and schedule. And as Secretary Gates has said many times, he's looking for the 80% solution, rapid deployment, what we can get out to our warfighters quickly to serve the mission. He's not looking for a long acquisition buy. And again, he wants things that are cost effective, on schedule, and rapidly deployed. We're seeing this evolve in our contracts where we're seeing more fixed price contracts. We're seeing opportunities to provide innovation. Where in the past they would actually buy bodies, but now they're buying solutions. So it's actually a positive play, I think, for our industry.
When you talk about cost, is that coming at the expense of value? And I don't mean those with capital letters in the technical contracting sense of a cost contract versus a value contract, but just the more the broad concept.
Oh, no, not at all. I think innovation is value. So it's actually giving industry an opportunity to show our wares, you might say, and to actually get a return on our investment. A company like SAIC spends quite a bit on internal research and development just so we can come up with these innovative solutions. We also, like many of our peers, focus on integration, where we can take other people's products and build a new solution for our government partners. So I actually believe this provides value. We're also not seeing an emphasis on fees, right? So it's more driving the cost down, but our customers are looking at rewarding industry now for staying on cost, being innovative, and staying on schedule, and they can do that with higher fees.
The reason I ask about the cost versus value equilibrium is because there's a perception in, I think, the defense thought leadership community, more so than the contracting community, that's what's happening. That the attention, the bottom line is really the only thing that matters, and the quality of the requirements or the quality of the solution that the company delivers to meet those requirements is not as much of a consideration. And maybe that's with the 80% solution that you're talking about mixed in. Maybe that's where that's coming from.
I really have not seen that. I have not seen any of our customers back off the importance of the mission and the warfighter, and I think that's where you'd see that. If they were backing away from value, then who are we putting at risk?
Right.
But the end user, and that's not what I've seen. Actually, the emphasis is more on what can we get to the warfighter sooner. Right. So I would see that they're trying to enhance the value proposition. They're just not going to pay more than they need to pay, and they are expecting industry to be more responsive, sharpen our pencils, again, look at an integrator role, try and build new capabilities on legacy systems, leverage the funding that we have, and basically do more with less.
I was at an event this morning with Terry Takai, and she was talking about that very issue, that the solution may not necessarily be driven by one service provider anymore, that you may be in a position where SAIC is partnering with one or multiple companies to deliver whatever a total solution is. Is that something that you're seeing a lot more of, not necessarily even just from your DOD customers, but across government. Are you seeing that more where somebody is saying, we may want you to do this one particular aspect mm-hmm. of this, or granting that this may be a five-year process, right. and we're going to chop it up according to the 25-point plan, develop it agilely. Mm-hmm. So this only this one little part might be yours, and we'll see what happens the rest of the time. Is that?
I really haven't seen that. I've seen more of an emphasis on our industry partnering with the government and being an integrator.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe actually just buying a piece here and a piece there could end up being inefficient.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm seeing our customer base, whether it's DOD or federal space, looking at the total package.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not turning that over to the contractor like the old LSIs,
yeah.
but in fact, letting us work with their leadership to come up with the integrated solution. So I'm not seeing the piece part buys at
mm-hmm.
all.
What has the effort that Secretary Gates talked about for a while and then backed off on a little bit as far as insourcing, outsourcing, that whole discussion, how mm-hmm. has that impacted your business, if at all?
We saw most of those impacts last year, mm-hmm. and I would say they're over now that the directives come out to stop insourcing, mm-hmm. basically. It kind of went after those positions that were really more staff augmentation. Again, with just the age of SCIC, we had some pockets of that within our enterprise. And actually, having that insourced by the government is a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it should be done, right? And we took the resources that we might have invested in those types of efforts and redirected those into the more integration-type, higher-end efforts that we wanted to focus on.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to hear you say that, because I think there's mm-hmm. a perception that industry would be automatically opposed mm-hmm. to anything being insourced, because mm-hmm. this is our business area, and we're going to be right. very protective of that. So to hear you talk about that approach, mm-hmm. I think, is interesting.
Well, and also it kind of flies in the face of the OCI issues.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what was inherently governmental can also create OCIs
mm-hmm.
for an enterprise. And we're very, very sensitive to that.
Overall, how is it different to do business with DOD today than it was, let's say, 5 years ago, a broader timeline?
You know, it's funny. I've been in the business a long time, and I've just loved to watch the evolution of the partnership with the customers, with the government, whether DOD, Fed, the federal space. I've seen that partnership becoming even tighter. I mean, we're in this together. So we all understand that we have issues with the budget, that we have a significant debt issue, and we all understand that we have a mission with the warfighter that we need to serve. So instead of an us versus them type of an attitude, which can easily happen when you have a situation like this, you know, mm-hmm. everybody out for themselves, I have not seen that
mm-hmm.
at all. I think that our government partners have reached out to industry to look at better ways to do business. They want our input on how to do things. They are a big proponent of public companies to make sure that the outside world understands that low cost does not mean low fees,
mm-hmm.
which would hurt our stakeholders
yeah.
in many cases. So I'm actually very, very impressed with the open dialogue that we have with our customers in this type of a situation, and I see that improving as time goes on.
Let's talk about that some more when we come back from the break, because that's one of the things, one of the mm-hmm. myths that Dan Gordon's trying to bust, mm-hmm. and we'll talk some more about that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter with Deb Alderson of SAIC on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back in a moment.
Goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Agriculture is trying to shine a spotlight on what it calls food deserts, low-income neighborhoods with poor access to nutritious food. USDA's Economic Research Service developed a food desert locator, a web-based mapping tool that shows food deserts across the U.S. and shows population characteristics in those census tracts. The department says it wants to help policymakers and researchers expand access to fresh and healthy food in the 6,500 deserts deserts across the country.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is hypertension, featuring Dr. John Lee, an internist with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Blood pressure measures the force in your vessels when your heart pumps blood. Hypertension, or high blood pressure, is when the numbers are greater than 140 over 90 and stay high consistently over time. Here are some tips to help lower your blood pressure. Stick to a heart-healthy diet. Eat less fat and sodium and eat more fiber. Limit alcohol intake. Try to exercise at least 30 minutes a day, 5 times a week. Quit smoking. Achieve and maintain a healthy weight. Talk with your doctor to see what medications, if any, can help lower your blood pressure. Hypertension rarely causes symptoms, but it can lead to heart attacks and strokes. That's why it's called the silent killer. Kaiser Permanente encourages you to know your blood pressure and talk with your physician about how to achieve the level that's right for you. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
IT professionals and graduates from around the country have a lot to say about their experiences from the online Masters in Information Systems from UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
My current title is Chief of Technology. That was one of the things that I was actually looking for, was to have chief or officer within my position title.
Apply today for our upcoming semester. For more information, call 1-800-353-UMBC or visit us online at onlinems.umbc.edu.
Tune in to Fed Central, dedicated to sharing insights and best practices on topics ranging from cybersecurity to sustainability to healthcare reform. Hear straight talk from government leaders and industry specialists on the issues that are shaping how agencies serve their mission and their constituents. Hosted by veteran broadcaster Jane Norris. Don't miss Fed Central on the 1st of June at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Sponsored by Deloitte.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Can the federal government ever say anything briefly and clearly other than e pluribus unum? We'll hear about new guidance from, get this, the Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board. Plus, energy uses a new tool for sharing documents, and it's PDC. Pretty darn cool. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Deb Alderson of SAIC is in with me today for Industry Chatter, and we talked before the break about collaboration and the dialogue that goes on between companies and the agencies. Are you seeing a progression in the kind of collaboration that Dan Gordon and Martha Johnson are talking about, that they want agencies and vendors to be engaged long before any paper is written on what the agency actually wants to buy?
Well, Francis, I see it in pockets. In the federal space, I've seen some excellent examples with the State Department where they actually bring in the potential vendors or suppliers, and they talk about their requirements. They stress if they want innovation or if they want business as usual, and they give industry an opportunity to ask questions before the paper ever hits the street as far as the solicitations.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's outstanding. They also exercise a lot of oral presentations, and again, just that open dialogue. I don't see as much of that on the DOD side. There are some agencies within DOD that really use orals and have that dialogue, but there seems to be a concern about sharing too much with the potential bidders as far as OCIs, influencing the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So I still think we need to take a look or continue to partner with our government agencies to find ways to make them more comfortable to share those requirements, to get the feedback from industry on what do we think.
Yeah.
What do we think the best way to work an integrated solution or be innovative or to do more with less?
Yeah, that's an interesting point because that's, to me, gets at the heart of what it is that mm-hmm. especially Dan Gordon is talking mm-hmm. about. That's the point, is
right.
to help for you and your colleagues, your competitors, to be able to help the agencies understand what's possible to meet a solution and to put in those requirements rather than to kind of keep them proprietary and kind of shield them mm-hmm. from you. Is that fair to you?
Yeah, that's very true, but there's still a concern about if you influence the requirements, then you potentially cannot respond to the solicitation.
Yeah, okay.
So we need to find out, and we do in some of the open forums, some of the industry days, the FCAs and others, where we have the opportunity to, interface with our customers in an open forum so everybody has access to the same information.
Yeah.
And in those cases, they'll share some of the requirements or the challenges that they have. But as far as talking to, particular proponents or companies in industry and so forth to really touch or drive the requirements, no, we're not.
Have you seen some structures that you mm-hmm. think that maybe are effective in other areas of business the company works in, maybe not even federal, that might be a good fit for that kind of thing? Because that seems to be where mm-hmm. the administration, where OFPP mm-hmm. and where GSA and some of the other contracting agencies really want to push this relationship, is to create some kind of environment mm-hmm. where everybody can participate and maybe even participate in such a way that you won't reveal information you don't want to reveal, and yet the agency can still get answers ahead of time, so when the paper does hit the street, it reflects all of the potential possibilities without favoring somebody over the other.
Now, the only,
and that's a weird balance,
yeah,
I know.
No, yeah,
really,
and I really haven't seen that. I mean, most of our work is done in the federal space,
mm-hmm.
so I have not had the opportunity to see many cases where you come in and actually work with the potential buyer on setting requirements or discussing the realm of the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what I am seeing, though, again, I go back to the comment on fixed price bids, they're now allowing us more of an opportunity to actually bring innovation into the bids. So,
mm-hmm.
again, instead of the past when they would specifically say, I want, you know, five of this and six of these, now it's, here's my problem, give me your solution.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that I can trace your price.
Yeah. How are they doing at being able to weigh mm-hmm. the various solutions and evaluate them? Because for a long time, that seemed to be a sticking mm-hmm. point. SAIC brings this solution, mm-hmm. and it looks absolutely nothing mm-hmm. like what the Francis Rose Company brings.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, one or the other may be equally viable, and the prices may be very similar, mm-hmm. but it was difficult for the agencies to figure out how to value and weigh each of those.
Well, I think what we've seen, Francis, is a real increase in the quality of the reviewers on the government side. So
mm-hmm.
you have to, it's no longer just having, you know, contracts make the decision, right? So you have to make sure, and I see this on the part of our government customers all the time, that those evaluating the proposals have the skills necessary to do that, where they can look at a SAIC solution versus one of our competitors' solutions and decide which one they want.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be an educated buyer, so I'm seeing a lot more of that.
Yeah, the other element of that, too, is that the contracting shops, the procurement mm-hmm. shops, are the link between you mm-hmm. and the real person that uses the thing, the
right.
end user. Are they being brought into the process a lot better, too? Because that's the other part of the mm-hmm. collaboration piece
mm-hmm.
that people have lamented for a long time, is I'm dealing only with the contracting shop, and then I go and build the thing, mm-hmm. and the person says, well, why doesn't it do this? And everybody's slapping heads.
Right. It depends on the agency. I mean, and it also depends on the complexity of the solution. You know, if it's where they're just basically buying bodies,
mm-hmm.
Then, no, they may just turn that over to the contracting officer.
Right.
But in the more technical types of bids, where, again, they're counting on a lot more innovation, or there's there's a scheduling cost concerns and things like that. No, the technical community is definitely weighing in.
Deb Alderson is my guest. She's president of the Defense Solutions Group at SAIC on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our conversation continues in just a moment.
It's the only program of its kind in the world, a unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
Are you a Federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or an active member of the Uniformed Services? Through June 24th, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Actively at work, Federal and U.S. Postal Service employees and their spouses or same-sex domestic partners and active members of the Uniformed Services and their spouses are eligible to apply with abbreviated underwriting, which means you answer fewer health questions. Learn more at ltcfeds.com.
Discover, connect, collaborate, secure. The i2 America's User Conference 2011 kicks off June 7th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. i2 brings together top minds from defense, law enforcement, national security, and commercial sectors for 3 full days to help you accelerate your mission. Experience the latest innovations that have helped make our world safer for over 20 years. The i2 America's User Conference is the only place to share information and collaborate with hundreds of other i2 users. Register today at i2group.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Profile America, Thursday, May 26th. This coming holiday weekend, we'll see the great seasonal migration to decks, balconies, and backyards to fire up our gas or charcoal grills. May is not only National Barbecue Month, but also National Hamburger Month. While cooking food outside has occurred throughout history, grilling became a popular recreation in the U.S. in the 1920s. The first charcoal briquettes were produced by Henry Ford, using scrap wood left over from making Model Ts. More than a third of U.S. adults enjoy grilling out. Close to 13 million do so at least twice a week. That may help account for the 61 pounds of beef and 59 pounds of chicken that Americans eat on average each year. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for May is the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure, happening Saturday, June 4th on the National Mall. Whether you run, walk, or in the case of our WTOP colleagues, sleep, we can help end breast cancer forever. Join WTOP as they sleep in for the cure. Fight breast cancer without leaving your bed. Donate today at WTOP.com, search sleep. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Deb Alderson of SAIC is my guest on Industry Chatter today. Is it getting easier, do you think, or harder, Deb, to do business with the government with the budget situation the way it is, regulations change from time to time and that kind of thing? What's the trend line that you're seeing there?
Francis, this has never been an easy business, mm-hmm. but that's one of the reasons I love it. I think it's more difficult just because of some of the uncertainties. You know, working with the extended continuing resolution when we had that causes a lot of angst on the side of our customers. You can't blame them, mm-hmm. you know. So it slows down the whole procurement cycle. And as you slow that down, then we have, you know, issues with trying to keep the bench going as we're waiting for an award. Also, the increase in the number of protests. Mm-hmm. I was raised in this industry supporting the federal government, and it was just something that you didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because of the shift in the market and the emphasis on holding on to market share, you're just seeing a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that slows the process down.
Yeah.
So I've seen a tremendous slowing. We have a lot of bids, like I'm sure our colleagues in the industry have, that are just sitting there under evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
The emphasis on more multiple award IDIQ contract vehicles. And if they're, you know, you can go single award if it's under 100 million. If it's over 100 million, you have to go multiple award. That's shortening the cycle also.
Mm-hmm.
You're hitting the ceilings quicker. You have to invest in bid and proposal dollars to win and then invest again to go after the task order. So that's driving cost up,
mm-hmm.
which is making it more difficult for industry. Especially with the pressures we're having on costs.
Yeah.
So I see areas where I think, working together, we could both be more efficient on the industry side and mm-hmm. on the federal government side.
Well, talk about some of those. What is something that you and your colleagues in industry could do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it requires a change in policy or in regulation or something like that, or removal of regulation or whatever. But name a thing or two, if you can, that you think industry could do to help streamline that process, drive down costs, and you would still be able to provide the same level of service that you're providing.
Well, I really think if we could continue to work with our government partners and talk about just what are the thresholds. I go back to these single versus multiple award
mm-hmm.
IDIQs. I think IDIQs are actually a wonderful tool for our government partners to use. But when they reduce the ceiling of those, again, it's created a lot of churn. So our cost is going up because our bid and proposal cost is going up. And I understand we want competition, so that's not my point there. But perhaps taking a look at raising the ceiling for those IDIQs where you could still have a single award
mm-hmm.
if you wanted, or if you want multiple award because that serves the market conditions better, that's fine, but not just because it's a threshold.
Mm-hmm.
I really think revisiting the thresholds for the single versus multiple award would be very useful.
Are you talking about just changing the numbers maybe or changing the criteria that are used for determining which are single and which are multiple? Or
it's a little bit of both. Right now it appears that a lot of the criteria is solely the dollar value.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe more clarity from the customers on what's driving it. If you want a multiple award because you want that competition, then that certainly makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing it just because you have threshold issues and you have to go to get more approval to go over 100 million, then mm-hmm. then that's not a good business decision.
Yeah. What do you think your customers could do to help you help them get what they need better?
I think just neither party should settle. You know, if it looks like something is being done that working together we could make more efficient, then we need a forum to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I said earlier in our talk, I find our government partners, whether it's Fed Space or DOD, have been very open to communicate. Now I guess everybody's looking for action.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there's talk that, you know, if we come in and we're performing, you know, above it, if we're performing under cost and we're within schedule, that there might be rewards
mm-hmm.
for those contractors. Rewards could be increased cash flow, you know, early payments,
mm-hmm.
say, or maybe higher margins and things like that. Well, I guess everybody's a little anxious to see, okay, we're willing to take that
mm-hmm.
that risk on. Now, are you really willing to reward us?
Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied that some of the things that you're hearing about, those are some things that Bill Lynn's talked about, Ash Carter's talked about those things. We've played highlights of some of those conversations on the air here. Are those incentives, do you think, sufficient to get you and your partners and your peers in industry to move along and deliver some of those results that the Pentagon wants?
Very much so. Very much so.
So it's more the implementation and the fact of if we do our part, are we really going to see it, right, rather than what the conversation is about specifically line by line.
Exactly. And I think sometimes it's just because there's so much talk, and that's kind of our industry. It would really show industry that this is no kidding. This is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to reward for performance.
Yeah.
And we're all up for that. That's how we treat our people, right?
Yeah.
So we're more than willing to see that change.
Deb Alderson is the president of the Defense Solutions Group at SAIC. She's my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and our conversation continues in just a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russin on Capitol Hill. Some controversial parts of the Patriot Act expire this evening at midnight if Congress does not act. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell says the debate is focusing on surveillance powers of the government versus civil rights.
Advocates of this Patriot Act extension have been forceful, but you also have a very strong argument from some of the Tea Party senators saying there's some important rights that need to be looked at here and some changes need to be made to the Patriot Act.
Weaker than expected. That's the buzz on this morning's GDP update that pegs first quarter economic growth at 1.8%. CNBC's Becky Quick says corporate profits fell for the first time in 2 years.
They have seen a real buildup in inventories and that demand has dropped off because consumers aren't buying.
And women are continuing to outlive men, but men are gaining on them. New census figures show men are narrowing the gap, mostly in the 65-plus age group. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
This Memorial Day weekend at Ace, get $10 off Royal and Royal Finest paint after mail-in rebate.
The weekend is coming!
And quickly turn your painting to-do list...
The weekend is coming!
...into a to-done list.
The weekend is coming!
So visit your local Ace and get saving, then get your weekend back. At Ace, the helpful place. 4-gallon rebate limit on purchases made May 27th through 30th.
The weekend is coming! The weekend is coming!
See store for additional conditions and limitations.
If you're thinking about selling your car, the first place you should go is CarMax. At CarMax, we'll buy your car, even if you don't buy a car from us. And it couldn't be easier. Just bring in your car and we'll appraise it for free and give you a written offer that's good for 7 days. So you can think it over or sell it right away. If it's time to sell your car, do it the easy way. Just bring it into CarMax today. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
If you're in federal IT, you want to hear more about storage efficiency, especially when storage is eating up your IT budget. But what is storage efficiency? NetApp makes it simple. It's storage that's flexible, that's easier to manage, that requires far less hardware, often only half as much. And half as much means half the cost. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like CDWG. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal. Tom Temin and Amy Morris, weekday morning, 6 to 10.
That leaves about a third of Americans over the age of 15 who have never been married.
30%, yeah.
Those figures come from a report with a romantic title called, ready, Oh, this is hot. Number, timing, and duration of marriages and divorces, 2009.
Well, they put no emotion in this report.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday morning, 6 to 10.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The president of the Defense Solutions Group at SAIC, Deborah Alderson, is my guest for the hour. And right now, when you talk about anything to do with defense, I think what pops into a lot of people's mind first is Secretary Gates leaving and Leon Panetta coming in. But there are a number of other things. One of the things we're going to talk about on the program tomorrow at about 5:40 with Rudy De Leon, the former Deputy Secretary of Defense, is the overall churn in the national defense and security community. We have, as I mentioned, Mr. Panetta taking over at DOD if he's confirmed, and I think the chances of that are about 190%. We have General Petraeus retiring and taking over at CIA. It appears that General Dempsey will take over as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs when Admiral Mullen departs. Do you remember a time when there was this much going on at that high a level? And what is that? How do you as a company sit back and take all of this in and say, how do we plan? How do we think about maybe not even the individual personalities, but just the fact that there is going to be a tremendous amount of upheaval smashed into a really short period of time?
Right. Well, Francis, I don't recall this amount of churn at this level. And, yeah, we watch it very, very closely as far as who we think is going to move into the slots and particularly what is their attitude going into that. But more importantly, how you see it in the tactical day-to-day activities is things typically slow down. So I think that's a real concern that that industry has because we've already had a slowing down, as I talked about earlier, just with, you know, setting the requirements, getting the solicitations out, working with an extended, you know, CR. Mm-hmm. So we've already had a slowdown. Now you have all this change in leadership. We're going to find our customers are looking up to see if there's going to be a change in direction. Typically they wait, and I think that's going to cause some additional problems. I'm very pleased with the announcements of the new leadership, and I think they're all more than qualified.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit, I was really liked the fact that Secretary Gates stayed on like he did and gave us some continuity and some stability in a time where we really, really needed it.
Yeah, it struck me that there was a period of time in the very early months of this administration where people were a little wary of what was going to come out of DOD. Would Secretary Gates continue to have the autonomy to take the department in the direction that he wanted to? And once the answer to that question was obviously yes, I think it seems to me, at least from the outside, that you and the other folks in the community said, all right, so we can kind of get back to business as we figured it would be.
Yeah, and it wasn't business as usual. It's actually business quite different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the secretary coming out and demonstrating the fact that he was not going to tolerate taking forever to get something, you know, get a resource to our warfighters with the MRAP program, you know, rapid deployment. And I'm very proud to say that SAIC was a big part of that and doing the command and control integration as a partner with SPAWAR down in Charleston and then also tracking the logistics of these MRAPs once they were deployed. But I think the secretary stepping out and really changing how we bought things, how we operated, and how we deployed was very, very exciting. And I'm just hoping that we still continue to have that type of innovative thought and challenge of the system in order to serve the warfighter. I hope that continues with the new leadership.
It seems to me that some of that is driven just by the nature of the agency itself, because I had General Myers in here not too long ago talking about that very issue. And he said very proudly and rightfully so, he said, our men and women in uniform are very resourceful. And if they need something, they'll figure out how to get it if they can't get it through channels, they'll ask for they would rather ask for forgiveness later than permission now if that's what they need to do to do it. So it seems to me that a lot of what you're talking about is being driven by at least that mentality, if not the actual execution of that approach.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if you just look at the age of our warfighters and what the technology that they're used to and the iPhones and everything else, they're not going to tolerate not having the technical resources that they were used to having before they joined.
Yeah.
And made that commitment to the service. So I believe that our whole community, the government side and industry, is trying to be very, very responsive to the warfighters' needs. And you're right, the days of buying a technical solution that takes, 3 to 5 to 7 years to develop, they're over.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't do that. Technology is moving way too fast, and we have a customer in the warfighter who's used to the best.
Have the acquisition shops gotten that yet, though? Because we're back to kind of where we were before, where you're on one end of the equation and they're on the other end of the equation, and then the acquisition team is in the middle. And culture change, especially at DOD, is not something that is speedy necessarily.
I think they're trying, and I really think the increased power and buying power of the combatant commands has helped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because in the past, you really didn't see as much emphasis on the operational side. It really was more, and I'm talking many, many years ago, it was more an acquisition community, okay, as I saw it. Now, with the combatant commands and their ability to reach out and really touch what the operators need, and then relay that back to the acquisition community and demand things from the acquisition community, I think is very, very positive.
Yeah. Deb Alderson's my guest. She's the president of Defense Solutions Group at SAIC, and we'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment. It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
From text messages to apps, games and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at LightSquared.com.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
Russian President Dmitry Medvedev recently expressed reservations about a European missile shield and Russia's participation in the system. In a letter to leaders of NATO member nations, Medvedev clarified his country's position on and concerns about missile defense progress and cooperation. The United States' current approach for missile defense in Europe would deploy land and sea-based interceptors around Europe. In response to these concerns, the State Department reiterated its intention to cooperate with Russia on missile defense.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Have you missed a key step in planning for your retirement? You may have. Studies show that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care services at some point in their lives. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Now through June 24th, the FELTIP is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Learn more about this opportunity at ltcfeds.com.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Federal news and information just got more fun and interesting. Amy Morris joins Tom Temin on The Federal Drive, weekday mornings from 6 to 10. Tom and Amy tailor their show for Feds on the Go with usable information from trustworthy and seasoned journalists. You're going to learn, but they also might make you laugh. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Deb Alderson is president of the Defense Solutions Group at SAIC and my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked about innovation a number of times. That word seems to permeate throughout any conversation about contracting with government now because it seems to me that both sides of the business-to-government equation get the value proposition that's involved, that it's not just a matter of shiny stuff and fun toys anymore. Let me throw out a couple things that I'm seeing here and see what your thoughts are about them. First of all, the concept of agile development and how it fits with innovation, the idea that we're going to do these projects really short, mm-hmm. see where they stand, and then move on and not do, as you said before, seven-year waterfalls anymore.
Well, agile development to me is a perfect example of integration.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically going out there and identifying products or solutions across the industry base that once you integrate those, you build a new capability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's absolutely perfect because typically when you're focused on integration, those products or solutions that you're focusing on have already proven. They've been tested. They've gone through their build cycle, so it's reduced risk.
Mm-hmm.
They typically, as I said earlier, they have their life cycle developed, so the government's not paying for that development again. They're just paying for the integration.
Mm-hmm. The Pentagon releasing some guidance about open source software and talking about the potential benefits, cost savings, whatever. How does a policy like that affect a company like yours?
I think it provides tremendous opportunities when they're looking at open source. I mean, if we can start focusing on apps,
mm-hmm.
that's tremendous.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, just opens up that, we'll reuse the term again, innovation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about open source.
There is still a little squeamishness inside agencies in general, not necessarily DOD in particular. I can't speak to that, but still a little squeamishness about open source software because of the, I guess, the image more mm-hmm. so than the actual stuff itself. The whole idea that if it's open, everybody has access to it, and that's probably not a fair characterization.
No, I don't think it, and SAIC, like a lot of our companies, has a real emphasis on information security and cyber. Actually, we just opened up a cyber innovation center in Columbia, Maryland, which is very, very impressive. But, you can have open source and still have security.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, is where the innovation comes from.
Mm-hmm. Mobile technology, I can't believe we've gotten almost to the end of the conversation mm-hmm. and not talked about the Army deciding on Android as a mm-hmm. platform for mobile computing. And we mentioned the young warfighters that are bringing their own stuff, essentially, whether DOD likes it or not. What do you see there as a role, not just necessarily for your company, but for the vendor community as a whole, to help DOD understand the possibilities of what they can do mobily?
I think it's tremendous. Again, if you're just looking at secure handhelds, just think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And think about the impact that has on some of the core business that a lot of us do right now with running a help desk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really see a help desk in the future? Look at cloud computing. I mean, it's just, I think what we're seeing over the last several months, well, several years actually, with the emphasis on cyber, cloud computing, and handhelds,
mm-hmm.
iPhones, apps, this to me has been one of the most enlightening as far as just how quick technology can move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's going to drive a change in our acquisition process.
It seems like it will almost have to, because it's already at a point where in a year or 2 year procurement cycle, by the time you get to the end, what you started with is obsolete. And that timeline's only going to compress, isn't it?
Exactly. Oh, yes, very much so. So that's why you have to work the open source, the agile acquisition process, because we can't buy things today that take 10 years to develop and then expect to deploy them to a warfighter who's going to get excited about the technology.
Mm-hmm. Is it new? Do you think that that's even part of it, though? For a long time, I got a sense that the idea, especially in the military, was here's what you have to work with, and if you don't like it, that's tough, because we're going to order you to work with this. That's still feasible. That's still what the end user is required to do if he or she's ordered to do so. But just that strikes me as as maybe a win when it comes to culture.
Oh, yeah, but look at the leadership we have in the military now. So the age of the leadership who's out in the field, they're also used to technology.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of a change also.
There's a million more things I would like to cover with you, and we're out of time. So I'm going to make you come back at some point and continue this conversation. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francis. I really enjoyed it.